Before we get started on item G, Judge Jarr will take roll, given our 12 members on phone.
Okay, here we go then. Judge Brandlin?
I'm sorry, could you please speak up?
Judge Brandlin?
Speaking. Present.
All right then. Mr. Carlson?
I'm present, thanks.
Ms. Davis? Judge D'Alba?
Present.
Judge Earl?
Present.
Judge Ellsworth?
Present.
Ms. Mathai?
Present.
Judge McCabe?
Present.
Judge Rosenberg?
Present.
Ms. Todd?
Present.
Judge Walkup?
Here.
The record should reflect that our staff learned during the initial session that Ms. Davis had telephone problems on her end and fell off the line. Efforts have been ongoing to get her back on the line, but apparently it's on the phone system on her end of things. So the record should reflect that at some juncture, unidentified, Ms. Davis was out of touch.
Thank you, Judge Jarr. This is item G, the trial court's pilot project authorizing remote video proceedings in traffic infraction cases. I welcome Justice Terrence Berniers, chair of the Court Technology Advisory Committee, as part of the panel of presenters, Judge Mark Burrell, chair, Traffic Advisory Committee, Judge Jonathan Conklin, Fresno Superior Court. I also believe we have with us Ms. Dawn Anino, court attorney, Fresno Superior Court, Ms. Mary Calderon, court manager, Fresno Superior Court, and Mr. Courtney Tucker, AOC Legal Services Office. Before we get started, there are requests for public comment on item G. We have three speakers, one for 5 minutes and two who will share 5 minutes. So I call up to the podium Mr. Ignacio Hernandez, legislative and policy advocate for the California Attorneys for Criminal Justice. Welcome, Mr. Hernandez. Would you like Mr. Ferrer to go first? Certainly. Mr. Ferrer, you would go first then. President of the California Federation of Interpreters, will you be sharing your time with Ms. Annabelle Garay?
No, I shall be speaking alone.
Thank you.
Honorable Chief Justice Cantil Sacaoye, honored members of the council, good afternoon. I am Michael Ferreira, the president of California Federation of Interpreters, a collective bargaining unit and professional organization that represents employee interpreters in the California courts, numbering around 900-plus individuals. First and foremost, CFI's membership represents the judicial system's linchpin in providing language access for limited English proficient court users all throughout California, both for in-court proceedings as well as events ancillary to or arising out of those hearings. I've come here today to comment on the pilot program for remote video proceedings, a program that we understand will only deal with infraction-level cases, primarily for traffic matters. Our membership is concerned with the language access component of the program and how there may be some oversights as to how the courts would be providing those services, as well as other facets contingent upon interpretation over any remote system, whether it be simply telephonic or televideo in nature. When we first got information concerning the pilot project, it was not clear where the interpreter would fit into the system. While it is understood that the bench officer would be in one location and the court users in several, if not many others, it was unclear where the interpreters would be positioned. I've only just recently been informed that there is a commitment to assign the interpreters, that is to say, our members who will be providing the language access service, at the various locations throughout the judicial branch entities' jurisdictions. This is music to our ears, so to speak, as this will be essential to maintain our professional best practices, particularly insofar as being able to see and understand not only the spoken language of our LEP individual, but also the extra linguistic cues that form part of the total communication. Complete and precise interpretation will be maintained. Also, one of the mainstays of our unit work as court interpreters is to provide site translations of any documentation court users may receive, such as instructions for payment or community service options, as well as traffic school enrollment details. If the interpreter is at the same site as the court user, This site translation facet is not just facilitated but guaranteed. Court users need a strong commitment on the part of the Judicial Council to have an interpreter on site at the remote location as a requirement of the pilot program proposal. This would go a long way in perfecting the language access component. However, allow me a moment to highlight some other considerations that may not have been considered with regard to presenting documents to the bench officer during arraignments or presenting evidence or witnesses during a traffic trial. For example, how will the documents and the photos and things of that ilk be shown to the bench officer on the other end? Where will the law enforcement officer or law enforcement witnesses be positioned? If a defendant brings a lawyer, or in pro se litigants wish to converse confidentially with their witness, what feature in this system will ensure privacy? Will it be a dedicated channel or an on-off switch for audio? And finally, what arrangements have been made for interpretation of both witness and defendant when the witness is for the people and both defendant and the witness need interpreting services? Our ethics as interpreters is to stay with one or the other. Answers to these questions and many others that will appear as the program gets underway are crucial to its success. I am here to say that this program can be improved and turned into a system to expand access to the courts. I'm here to say that CFI is ready to participate as a justice partner to perfect any language access system you may wish to design and implement.
One minute.
We are ready with the expertise, the knowledge base, the wide breadth of experience to partner with the AOC and the Judicial Council to improve and expand every aspect of language access in the courts and all events or language needs ancillary to or resulting from court proceedings. We are not just your stable permanent interpreter employee base. We are your justice partners in helping to improve access to the courts for all Californians. Thank you for your consideration of my comments and for the opportunity to address this body.
Thank you, Mr. Ferreira. Ms. Annabelle Garay, or? Okay, thank you. Then Mr. Ignacio Hernandez, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Ignacio Hernandez, and I'm here on behalf of the California Attorneys for Criminal Justice, which is a statewide association of criminal defense attorneys. I'm also here, in addition, on behalf of the California Federation of Interpreters. They've already presented their comments, and let me just highlight the request of CFI is to amend this proposal to require that the interpreter be physically present at the remote location. That is not included in the current language of the proposal. It is a proposed amendment. I hope we can have discussion and hopefully a motion to include that in the proposal. As far as the criminal defense attorneys, our issues are many, but let me focus on one that is new that came up after last week's amended proposal, and that is a potential violation of the Confrontation Clause. I have been involved in this discussion on using remote video equipment for a number of years in the legislature and when there have been proposals at Judicial Council. We have never had a proposal to use video technology in a trial proceeding. This would be the first time. And the new twist that came up last week is we will allow for law enforcement officer to be physically present at the courthouse when the defendant driver is at a remote location. So the cross-examination of the witness will occur through video equipment. This is brand new. This is problematic. And generally, this is a violation of the Confrontation Clause. In the 7 days that I've had to research this issue, because again, it was never raised in the discussions I've had over the last few months that this would be part of the proposal, but in the last few days I've dug in and done my case research. I've reached out to community organizations that deal with these issues. I've reached out to top constitutional scholars in this country. And the response has been, this could be a violation of the Confrontation Clause. And I am a bit dismayed that the proposal does not even address this issue. The staff work, let me just back up. I know this is coming from a very sincere place. I know there are issues in Fresno County. We want to be helpful, but we cannot exchange efficiency for violations of the Constitution. It's just not what this body should do. So I'm asking that this proposal be amended to remove that provision. We do not want the law enforcement officer somewhere else. There is a waiver, some waiver language in the form. Do not think that that is adequate. We can have further discussion on that going forward if that ever wants to get added to this pilot project. Two other things I want to mention before my time is up. One is, this is not a pilot project as we normally conceive it. A pilot project is normally a county, two counties, three counties with limited time. And that's how it was described to me. This would be for Fresno County. The proposal allows for every county in California to request remote video sites. I asked this body to get it right the first time. I feel as if the approach has been, well, let's move this quickly, do it now, apologize later. That is not how this body normally operates. And I urge you to reconsider the proposal as it stands now. Let us sit down with the representatives from Fresno County. I haven't had the chance to do that. I have reached out to the cities that have supported, that are in support of this proposal. I spoke with two city managers earlier this week. They have said I've talked to them about the issue. They are supportive of the interpreter idea of having the interpreter physically present. They weren't sure what their feelings were on the law enforcement piece of it. But they were willing to have a discussion. And I think that's what we need to have, a fuller discussion, not just within judicial counsel and the advisory boards, not just with those that you normally discuss with, but the stakeholders that have an interest, the attorneys, the interpreters, the individuals who do represent the folks that live in Fresno County. I've reached out to the community organizations that I work with in Fresno County.
One minute.
And they were completely shocked by the proposal. They support the idea of greater access, as do I, as does my organization. But they were uncomfortable with the idea that a law enforcement officer would be somewhere else, that the potential that the judge, law enforcement officer, and interpreter would be at the courthouse while the driver is left at the remote location, simply because we're trying to make it easier for the individual to access our courts. If the focus is on what is best for the defendant or the accused, then let's be consistent. Let's make sure we do not even go into a gray area of rolling back their constitutional rights. Let's make sure they have the interpreter next to them. Let's get it right the first time. I know you want to move quickly. A few weeks of discussing this, and you can have it on your February agenda. It can be done. But at the very least, limit it to Fresno and make the changes on the interpreter, make the changes on the confrontation clause so you don't run into that problem, so that the judicial counsel is not singled out as going out front and violating the confrontation clause out of an urgency to address an issue. And the last thing is, I hope there will be an opportunity to, I know it's not normal procedure, but after the presentation is made, I don't know if there's an opportunity to respond to any questions, but I will ask the counsel if that does come up or if there's a question that we can respond to. This is a way, I think, to try to fix this proposal. I want to find a forum to fix this, and we haven't had an opportunity to discuss these issues in this kind of forum, especially the police matter, since it was just posted last week. So I do ask the body to consider that change in procedure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. And we understand your request, but we have no process for that at this time. But we'll hear the presentation. Justice Berniers.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the council. At a time when we're forced to close our courtrooms and even entire courthouses, we're forced to find ways to at least try to mitigate or ameliorate the negative impact that this is having on our citizens' access to justice. This proposal to allow, at the defendant's request only, remote video appearances in traffic infraction matters is one such effort. Because of the urgency that many of our courts face, including the Fresno court, we've tried to expedite this effort to get a reasonable proposal before the council that we can pilot and try on a temporary basis, and from which we can hopefully learn and to expand the effort. As you've already heard from the comments today, technology is not the limiting factor on our ability to provide reasonable public access to court services. The issues are far beyond technology. So at this point, I will defer the presentation on these matters to Mr. Tucker and Judge Burrell.
Thank you, Justice Berniers.
Chief Justice, members of the council, it's my pleasure to be to join you here today, aided with Justice Berniers and Courtney Tucker, to make this presentation to you of this forward-thinking proposal. The adoption of the rule and the forms that you are considering will establish a platform on which local courts can, if they choose, pursuant to court rules and with the council's approval, provide a means by which an infraction defendant may elect to have his or her trial or arraignment conducted from a remote location by a two-way video link. In trial courts that conduct remote video proceedings under the pilot project, defendants in eligible cases will be able to choose to appear at arraignments and or trial by two-way video link from a remote location selected by the court. The proposed rule and implementing forms will enable courts to provide the public with ongoing access to court proceedings at a time when court resources are being substantially reduced and courthouses are being closed. Because the proposal is for a pilot project, the experience and information gathered will aid you in determining best practices that will help us in decision making in the future. The suggestion for remote video proceedings originated from Fresno, and I'd like to thank our colleagues from Fresno for joining us on the phone today. They can explain to you how the budget cuts have affected their courtroom, their court branch, and has encouraged them and prompted them to close six outlying courthouses. Those facilities are no longer available to service the communities that previously depended upon them. Many of the individuals that those courthouses serviced are challenged when it comes to the process of getting themselves to the court in Fresno. This is the solution for that problem. Therefore, we view this proposal as a win-win. It serves the council's goals and objectives of developing effective case management rules to promote fair and efficient processing of cases. Additionally, and importantly, the proposal will improve access to justice and to promote fair and convenient proceedings. This proposal originally included a legislative proposal and rules and forms for remote video proceedings in compulsory school attendance cases as well as traffic infraction matters. Ultimately, however, school officials in Fresno decided against implementation of the program for compulsory attendance offenses, and that component was removed from the proposal. Because of the urgency of the situation, developing a rule and forms for the pilot project in traffic infraction cases was determined to be the best approach. Because the proposed actions are consistent with the council's rulemaking authority and are not inconsistent with existing statute of law, recognizing that the proceedings only take place upon the informed election of the defendant, the Judicial Council, we believe, may take action promptly to adopt the proposed rule and form, which will enable the program. After circulation of the proposal for public comment, the committees made numerous changes to address issues raised by the comments. And what I'd like to do is turn the podium over to Mr. Tucker so that he may outline for you the components of the program as it currently exists.
Thank you.
Chief Justice and members of the council, as now proposed, Rule 4.220 has comprehensive provisions to cover authorization for the pilot project, how the courts would apply for approval. The rule defines remote video proceeding, limits it to traffic cases.
defines the scope of the rule and how courts designate the locations where the court clerk will be present during the proceedings. The rule explains the scope of the pilot project and how defendants request to be included in that program. There are express provisions for a deposit of bail, appearance of witnesses, the statement that the program would violate the Confrontation Clause does not take into account that there are express waivers of rights by the defendant included in the process, that the defendant, if the defendant wishes to confront the officer when the officer is appearing at the court, the defendant has the right to go to the court and have the proceedings heard at the court, which would, in many cases, impose significant inconvenience and travel and expense to the defendant. So this is designed to acknowledge that they have those rights. They have the option to appear in court to exercise those rights, or if they choose something which is more convenient and can be handled by remote proceedings in a single joint arraignment and trial or a separate arraignment and trial, they have the option to do that to try to address their case in a way that is less burdensome, which is a result of all the court closures that we're now facing. The rule also has provisions regarding extensions of due dates, notice to the arresting officer, what happens if the defendant's noncompliant, determination of assessments, fines, and penalties by bench officers, and the ability for the local court to have additional rules and forms to address whatever has been left to their discretion, because the intention of the proposal is to leave as much as possible to the discretion of the local court to determine how they administer their cases and how case processing best works in their jurisdiction. It provides a framework without micromanaging the courts in a way that's unnecessary. And ultimately, it is a pilot project, and the point of it is to experiment in a way that's within the law, permitted by the law, and collect information and generate reports that will enable the counsel and the judiciary to determine whether this program should be continued or expanded or not, ultimately. As now proposed, it's limited to traffic infraction cases. The proposed rule expressly requires that the court clerk be present at the remote location. Originally, the proposal was that all RVP traffic infraction cases be a combined joint arraignment and trial. Now this has been expanded to allow for more flexibility, to allow courts that just want arraignments and trials to be held separately so that the defendant doesn't have to deposit bail. That's an option now. If the combined arraignment and trial process is used, defendant would deposit bail, which is consistent with current law for same-day arraignment and trial. The pilot project would be in effect from February 1st through December 31st, and that period of time should provide sufficient information and opportunity for interested courts to obtain valuable experience and information for evaluation of the program. Courts that want to establish a pilot project under guidelines that are being developed would submit an application that includes information about the procedures and forms the court intends to institute for processing cases, including procedures with respect to the use of interpreters. The proposed application procedure will have courts submit applications to the Council's Internal Technology Committee. The Technology Committee would review the application and prepare a report and recommendation that are presented to the Council at a public meeting where interested parties can provide input on the report and recommendations. The Council will then decide whether the court's application is approved. There are three proposed forms that provide information about the alternative procedures available and provide two different forms for RVP requests and waiver of rights, one for combined arraignments and trials, another for separate arraignment and trials. The forms for separate arraignment and trials include a place to indicate the amount of bail that's required if the court requires bail to schedule a trial date but separate from the arraignment date. And no deposit of bail is required to schedule an arraignment on a separate date from a trial date. Forms also include expanded notices to the defendant that the court may permit the officer who's issued the ticket and other witnesses to appear in court to testify and be cross-examined while the defendant appears at the remote location. And as I said previously, there are express waivers of rights included in the form to allow the defendant to make that choice. In addition, we believe that the express requirement of having the interpreter present, that the interpreter must be present at the remote location, is not required by current law, that it would improperly restrict the rights or the options of the court and the defendant. Ultimately, it's the defendant's right to the interpreter. And so if the defendant chooses to say that, you know, that there's no certified interpreter present at the remote location, nonetheless, I would like to appear there and have the interpreter interpret for me from the courthouse, they should have the right to do that, and the court should have that option. Ultimately, the court has discretion to say, we require an appearance physically of everyone in the court, and the other variations of that are at the discretion of the court as well. So in each specific instance, the court would make the judgment as to whether, under the specific circumstances, RVP is appropriate. If there are witnesses that are involved or there are attorneys that are involved, ultimately the court would make that determination as to whether it's appropriate under these circumstances to allow this particular case to be included in the pilot project or not. And there'll be reports generated to identify what works, what doesn't work, what's beneficial, what's problematic. And I think Judge Burrell may have a few closing comments to make, so I'll turn the microphone back to Judge Burrell.
Thank you
very much.
Tucker.
I know my time is drawing to a near, so I simply suggest to you that the Traffic and Court Technology Advisory Committees recommend that the Judicial Council, number one, adopt Rule of Court 4.220, effective February 1, 2013, to authorize pilot projects for remote video proceedings in traffic infraction cases, and two, adopt Forms TR-500-INFO, TR-505, and TR-510, effective February 1, 2013, to assist courts and the public in implementing and using remote video proceedings for traffic infraction cases. And I'd be delighted to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Judge Bill. Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. This really isn't a question. Thank you anyway, but a couple of observations on the rule. First of all, it is significant to me that we have subsection A2, which, as Mr. Tucker referred to, requires a county wanting to institute a pilot project to bring the details of that project back to the council for approval before the county was allowed to go forward. And so in that sense, listening to the very sincerely stated comments of Mr. Ferreira and Mr. Hernandez, perhaps those concerns are slightly premature at this point, because if, for instance, the county came back and said, we want to have the interpreter either in the courthouse or have the option of being one place or the other, ultimately the council will then be making a decision as to which of those were appropriate. As to the confrontation clause issue that Mr. Hernandez raises, if the pilot project comes back to the council and there continues to be a confrontation clause issue, we can have that researched and we can have that fairly considered to make sure that we are not violating a defendant's constitutional rights, which I have a little difficulty understanding when the defendant is the only one who can insist on the remote location. In any event, the pressing need for this rule and to give the counties and the residents of the counties this option, I think, outweighs those concerns today by quite a lot. I will say also that having been involved for about 18 months now on the Rules and Projects Committee, there is certainly in certain circumstances a very beneficial and grave need to make uniform statewide rules. This departs from that somewhat, but in my view, and I think the current thinking of most of the members of RUPRO, is that we also need to build in the flexibility when it's appropriate for local communities to serve their constituencies, local courts, as best meets those communities' needs. And I think that in this circumstance, that the way this is proposed, the way it is set forth in the rule, accomplishes that quite nicely, and I certainly support the proposal.
Judge Jacobson and Justice Baxter.
Thank you, Chief. I want to respond specifically, or most particularly, to Mr. Hernandez and the comments on behalf of the California Attorneys for Criminal Justice. A couple of months ago in one of our RuPro telephone meetings, when we were looking at this, I shared the same concern. I was concerned about confrontation issues and the possibility of there being some level of perceived unfairness if we end up with a police officer present in the same room with the judge that's hearing the case and the defendant at a remote location. I expressed a preference for if any of us can be remote, all of it should be remote. And we discussed that at that time. I note that in the report under item G at page 10, the last sort of large paragraph there, that this concern that I expressed, I believe, is responded to in that paragraph. And I've also, my thinking has evolved somewhat, I suppose, as I've thought about this over the last couple months. I think it's very significant that right now the defendant has to show up for a live appearance. That's the way that our rules work at this point. This provides an additional option, presumably aimed at people that have resource issues that may not be otherwise able to make it to court, may suffer some sort of adverse action for failing to appear. This provides a good alternative to simply failing to appear. So the choice is the defendant's. We're talking about a written waiver situation, and I'm mindful that as recently as yesterday, I allowed an individual to waive his confrontation rights in exchange for 39 years in state prison. So we do it. We do this waiver idea with confrontation rights. This is something that's part and parcel of our system. Here what we're talking about is a narrow experiment with the smallest category of cases. And I don't mean to demean those cases, but it seems to me it's a safe place for us to experiment in this way. The five-day notice that the police officer would have to give if the police officer intends to show up live gives the defendant the opportunity to respond differently. I think that's a fairness factor that's built in here. I also think that Fresno County is suffering from an acute problem. We need to respond. We need to be flexible. This experiment, this response is appropriate in this situation. Finally, I think that this is a pilot project, which the label itself tells us that it's an experiment. And to some extent, as to problems that we're concerned about, and I have concerns about confrontation rights, that we need to let it play out a little bit and see whether these problems are hypothetical or, in fact, real and common. So I have a motion to adopt Rule 4.220 and the forms that go with it.
Justice, the motion's on the table. It's noted. I'll hear from Justice Baxter, then Judge Herman, then Judge Baker, then Judge Hardcastle.
I'd like to second the motion, Chief. And when I started my career as a lawyer in Fresno, as a deputy district attorney, I used to go out to those rural courts. Would drive out to Fireball, would drive out to Kalinga, would drive out to Kerman. And these were major undertakings. I mean, this wasn't San Francisco County where you're talking about 10 miles. This is a great distance. And if your car happened to break down halfway between Fresno and Fireball, you might be lost for a few days. And if someone suggested to me at that time that within my lifetime that those courts would be eliminated, I would have bet the ranch against it. I mean, I just couldn't imagine politically or on a policy basis or on any other measure that this could ever happen. But it did happen. And I have to say, it really created a very difficult situation, the budget situation facing the Fresno County Superior Court. Forced them into making a very, very unpopular decision. And they did what they had to do. And this proposal, I mean, this proposal doesn't talk about, it's limited to traffic infractions. It's limited to waivers. My concern is, how about all these other cases? How about the landlord-tenant controversies? How about the other measures that are more significant? This is a very, very modest resolution of a small problem. And there are greater problems out there. And I think the last thing we want to do is to micromanage the Fresno Superior Court. Those judges are perfectly capable and of hearing these arguments on confrontation and other related arguments, and presumably they'll make just decisions based on the facts before them. So, again, I'm proud to second the motion, and I strongly urge approval.
Thank you, Justice Baxter. Judge Herman.
Chief, this is Mary Beth Todd. If I could get in line to comment as well.
Right after
I know there's several before me.
Thank you, Mary
Beth. And Rosenberg as well.
Okay, I'm keeping the list.
Chief Dave DeAlba as well.
Okay, got it.
Who doesn't want to come?
Thank you, Judge Herman.
Well, I really appreciate the input from stakeholders on, you know, what we're trying to do here. Their comment is critical to our evaluation ultimately of how this pilot project plays out. And I think we will certainly be mindful. I know Fresno will be mindful and observe these issues from a laboratory perspective. But I just observe that, you know, the real headline here is this is about access to justice and providing a forum for parties that otherwise might not have a trial at all because they don't have either the money or the ability to travel 40 or 50 miles and in some counties hundreds of miles in order to get a live hearing on site at the county seat or at some other courthouse. And you know, we do have some precedent in the fact that we currently have in traffic cases trials by declaration. Where there certainly is no quote-unquote confrontation occurring when a litigant submits a declaration in terms of their view of traffic issues. And in terms of access, it seems to me that the video opportunity is a higher quality access to justice than trial by declaration for those folks that are living in a remote location in a county and there's a local facility or court that's accessible to them. So, you know, I agree with the comments that have previously been made in terms of I think this is a positive for the citizens of California in order to able.
Chief, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's difficult to hear Judge Herman. Is he referring to his last traffic ticket?
Have you been running my DMV report? So anyway, I support the motion.
Thank you. Judge Baker.
Thank you, Chief. Most of my comments would now be redundant. I wholeheartedly agree with all the comments that have been made so far. I'll just add that I come from Shasta County. It's a county, very large county of nearly 4 million square miles. We have one courthouse and people in the outlying parts of the county, it takes them a very long time to get to Redding, California, often encountering, especially this time of year, passes that are closed with snow. So this, I strongly support the motion, access to justice when a county like ours really becomes a constitutional issue and it's so difficult to get to the courthouse. We have one facility in the eastern part of the county in a place called Burney, which due to budget constraints we're down now to about one. I think we staff it once a month to handle traffic matters, and that's whether we're able to staff that in the future in light of the budget issues is probably doubtful. So this this motion, this new rule goes a long way to improving access in a county of our nature.
Judge Hardcastle.
Thank you, Chief. My comment goes to Form TR-505, and my only suggestion would be, after hearing from the speakers, was to perhaps have a block for a defendant to initial as to each one of those rights, and a judge might feel more comfortable that they've actually read the form if they have to initial it, rather than a single page of single-space text with a signature at the end. So it just might be help to make the record, and that would be my only comment.
Thank you. I'll take up your amendment to the motion in a moment after I hear the others, and I'll ask Ms. Mary Beth Todd.
Thank you, Chief. First, I just want to applaud Fresno Superior Court for their effort to mitigate the impact of their, what I'm sure was a very tough decision, to close their, you know, more remote branch facilities. And I think it's just really a testament to the spirit of the judicial branch that, notwithstanding these difficult economic times, we still are putting the public's access to justice first and foremost, and going to great lengths to ensure that we preserve their ability to access the court. That being said, given this version of the rule really had a very short cycle, and I'm not even real clear exactly how far and wide it got distributed for comment. This morning I did have an opportunity to talk with Mr. Tucker about one technical issue I had in the rule, and we were not able to conclude that conversation, and I'm going to go ahead and raise it here, and perhaps some further explanation will satisfy my concern, or perhaps we can come up with a solution to satisfy the issue. In subsection F2, it talks about the deposit of bail where I think it contemplates where the defendant has appeared for arraignment remotely and then would be scheduled for trial. And it indicates that the court at that time may require the deposit of bail. And my concern was that as part of this pilot, we are not attempting to allow courts by policy to require the deposit of bail at the arraignment, but that the court may require deposit of bail as they would normally require it in accordance with the law to guarantee the defendant's appearance in court, and that we are not putting any additional burden here outside of the law to require defendants to deposit bail. So I put that on the table. I think it could be, if I am mistaken, I would like to have Mr. Tucker address that. And if for any reason I'm not, I think some clarification is important. It could be accomplished either by removing subsection 2 altogether because that's already provided by law, or just adding just a clarifier that makes it clear that the court may require the deposit of bail as in accordance with the law to guarantee the appearance of the defendant in court.
Mr. Tucker, did you care to address that?
In terms of traffic cases, the bail is somewhat different than the bail for other criminal cases. It's not primarily intended to guarantee the appearance of a defendant who's been released from custody. The defendant's never been in custody. Primarily, the bail for a traffic infraction case is meant to deposit the amount of the fine, the standard amount of fine and penalties that would be imposed, and therefore, if the defendant fails to appear at the trial, the court would have that on deposit and can apply that towards the offense. There's not a lot of law available about the distinctions between traffic bail versus other criminal bail. I think the intention is not that the court have a blanket policy to do that. It's more that the judicial officer in the individual case can decide to do that. you know, based on the specifics of that case as to whether the person should be released because they've subjected themselves to the jurisdiction of the court by appearing for the arraignment. But in other words, it's a case-by-case situation, and maybe it should say the judicial officer may require deposit of bail, or I'm not sure. It's just, it's not.
My concern is that with the pilot language, that somehow this could be interpreted to mean, oh, as part of the pilot, you could have more of a blanket policy. So.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a case-by-case determination, not a blanket policy.
Yeah, so anyway, I put that out there as a possible amendment.
And so, Mary Beth, so I understand, what is your specific amendment to subdivision F sub 2?
It would be to either remove it altogether or just to put in a qualifier, and even Mr. Courtney's suggestion that instead of referring to the court, that we say the judicial officer.
So it would read, the second line of subdivision 2 says the court may, but your amendment, one of the options of your amendment, Mary Beth, is that the judicial officer may require deposit of bail. So that is to prevent the idea that there's a blanket court policy.
Exactly.
So this is a second amendment to the motion, and Judge Jacobson is shaking his head, but I wanted to get through all the comments before we discuss this. Thank you. Does that conclude your comments, Mary Beth?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Judge Rosenberg?
First of all, this is a really fine discussion. I want to commend everyone. But I think there were legitimate concerns raised regarding the interpreter issues and constitutional issues such as the Confrontation Clause. I think the issues will need to be sorted out primarily in the development of an appropriate form, which that's something judges do all the time. I think we need to make sure that the waivers are knowing and intelligent, and I'm confident that judges will do that, or judicial officers, as the case may be. Ultimately, I think we have to give trial courts the ability to be imaginative and innovative, to provide equal access to justice in difficult times. I mean, ideally, we'd have courthouses conveniently located in communities. We don't have that ability or luxury anymore, and so we have to undertake innovation while making sure that as we develop these pilot programs to broaden them, that we've protected everyone's rights. So the devil's in the detail. It's in the form that we use. And I'm certainly willing to launch this process.
Judge Rosenberg, I apologize. I missed the last part of your comment. I'm sorry. Judge Rosenberg, I missed the last part of your comment.
Oh, I said I am certainly willing to launch this process because I think we have to make sure that we give our trial courts the ability to be imaginative and innovative in these times. So I'm completely in support of it with the understanding that we're going to develop appropriate forms, and these forms will evolve to make sure that rights are protected.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg. Judge D'Alba.
Thank you, Chief. I just want to say that I agree with Judge Rosenberg's comments and all of Justice Baxter and Justice Hall's earlier comments, and I will vote for the pilot program and certainly urge its adoption. But I do have a concern that was expressed by the public speakers about interpreters and translations as it applies and affects those of limited English proficiency. The adopted or the forms that we propose to adopt, I expressed this in committee, and I just want to say it publicly. I'm hopeful there will not be an issue, but obviously there needs to be some translation of the forms, and particularly the waiver of the constitutional rights. And as to the location of the interpreter during these remote proceedings, our analysis that we have before us that's been provided to us at page 9 the second to the last paragraph, last sentence, addresses the question and comments that courts will arrange to have an interpreter present at the remote video location. I don't see that in the rules currently, and maybe it's there and I overlooked it, but certainly that issue, the issue of security at the remote site, the issue of confrontation and others are one, like Justice Hall and others have said, questions that we'll examine when the applications are brought forward to us. But I have no doubt that this rule will be universally applauded for the convenience it makes or will offer the public, the savings, and, of course, the prudent use of technology. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Diaz. Justice Hall, you have a comment?
I actually have a question relating both to Judge D'Alba's comment and also to Ms. Todd's. I assume we're going to have sort of a multifaceted friendly amendment here momentarily in order to avoid multiple votes. But I read page 9 to say the court will determine from the forms if an interpreter is needed and arrange to have one present for the RVP. I don't read that as saying the interpreter must be present at the site of the RVP, and I think that it was fashioned that way in order to give the counties who undertake these pilot projects some flexibility in confronting this issue. As to the part of the proposed friendly amendment about the deposit of bail, I guess I just have a question, never having served in traffic court, and maybe Mr. Tucker, you can help me with this since you touched on it. It sounded to me like the current practice and probably the long-standing practice in traffic court was to require bail deposited, or not in all cases, but it was certainly authorized to require bail to be deposited at the time of the arraignment if the defendant requested trial. And if that's the case, if that has been the law, I don't oppose Ms. Todd's suggestion, but I'm not sure if that has been the law, that it's necessary to do that.
The policy and practice varies from court to court. In general, if you want to get a trial scheduled without deposit of bail, you need to go into an arraignment and have the bench officer authorize it. The clerk can't do that. So, I think it may be common practice to grant the request once the defendant has showed that they have subjected themselves to the jurisdiction of the court, but certainly the bench officer has the discretion to require bail based on the circumstances of the case in front of them. If the person has failed to appear for two prior violations, that they have a good cause to require bail.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Judge Kaufman.
You know, I'm sitting here listening, and I've listened to all the big court judges talk now, and except for Judge Baker, of course, but seriously, living in a rural area, anything that allows people to have a day in court is exciting. It's something we should be encouraging. And if you took a vote of the general populace and you said to them, you can come to court and try your case, or you could actually stay home and have a video camera and try your traffic citation in your living room, how many people would vote for that? I think just about everybody would. All right? Of course, it would inundate us, but that's neither here nor there. I'm excited by that. I think this is a great idea. I trust the trial judges to develop a way of handling it in their courts, and they'll make sure that justice is done. They're not going to let anybody's rights be trampled on. As Morris Jacobson said before, is that people waive their rights every day. Okay, it's just part of the way we do business, and nobody's forcing anybody to do anything. And quite honestly, in the past, you've always had the right. If you got a citation in Fireball, you had a right to say to the officer, I want to go to the county seat. That's been on the books for 150 years. So we're not changing anything. It's just implementing, we're putting technology into the mix and it's making it work to our advantage and to the citizen's advantage.
Judge Jacobson, I wanted to...
Chief, afterwards is McCabe. Could you add me to the list?
Okay, let me ask a question. Did you have more comment, Judge Jacobson?
I'm ready to do it.
Okay, so let me ask Judge McCabe, please proceed.
Yes, thank you, and I'll limit my comments not to repeat what my honorable colleagues on the council have already said. I think they're insightful, and I'm in agreement with a lot of what they've said. Number one, I'm looking at the recommended guidelines for video remote interpreting, VRI, for ASL interpreted events, and ASL is one of many that need interpretation. This is a brochure that's handed out by the AOC, and I understand there's a pilot project, Riverside's one of the counties, and I saw the video, looked through the material, looked through it now. The interpreter is off-site, so I'm not sure how that reconciles with the objection that is presented now that the interpreter must be present with the defendant. I just note that. Number two, the option right now, generally speaking, is they can appear or because of limitation of resources, finances, mechanical to get there. They either appear or they don't appear, and trial proceeds in absentia. So it gives them an option to prevent that from happening because of limitation of resources. And I note it's not a requirement. It's a voluntary option, and I think we should be excited about presenting another option to the public. And then third and finally, there was a comment about the number of pilot projects, all 58 counties versus the traditional 1, 2, or 5. You know, the pilot project, the emphasis really is it's an experiment, it's temporary, and it's not a quantitative, it's a qualitative nature. The quality is in the conduct or activity itself to see if it works or it doesn't work. It really is not critical how many of these are occurring, and I think in the past they were limited because of resources. Here we're going to have input from all 58 counties, and the more the merrier. I think we can learn from the process to find out what needs to be done to improve this. I'm just opposed to trying to figure out what would be ideal, because if we do, we'd be in committee for another 3 years. I really think there's an urgent need, and not just in Fresno County, San Bernardino County, et cetera. We need to do something to meet the needs, and leveraging technology, which is available now, really is the answer. With that, I'll submit it.
Thank you. So we have two amendments to the motion, and the first one I'll take in order. It's Judge Hardcastle's amendment to the form TR-505 and putting checkboxes. And I know that Judge Jar has conferred with Judge Hardcastle and wants to clarify where those boxes would go on the form. Judge Jar.
Thank you, Chief. My understanding is, for clarification relative to proposed Amendment 1, turning to the form that is entitled Notice and Waiver of Rights and Request for Remote Video Arraignment and Trial, Judge Hardcastle is proposing not that there be initial boxes by the first five bullets at the top of the page under the heading Notice to Defendant of Rights, but rather that there be initial boxes opposite each of the three bulleted express waivers that appear below the title Waiver of Rights and Request for Remote Video Arraignment and Trial, so that there's a box that appears after the first line with the words defendant's initials, a box after the second line that is the line that reads My Right to a Speedy Trial Within 45 Days, semicolon, and then finally at the conclusion of the three-line a sentence opposite the third bullet, again, a box with defendant's initials. My further understanding for the record is that on the page that's numbered 17, Ms. Todd's proposed amendment number 2 would appear at line 9, the substitution of the words judicial officer for the word court. Judge Hardcastle, did I get number 1 right?
Yes, except Commissioner Alexander pointed out to me it should also apply to TR-510 in just the same way that you've described, which is the form the next page over.
Identical.
Right.
Checkboxes, and the proposed amendment would apply to each of those forms, TR-505 and TR-510, which appears printed on the back side of the same sheet of paper in our materials.
Right.
Thank you.
Do you accept those amendments, Judge Jacobson?
Yeah, I need to note that I have always found Judge Hardcastle and Ms. Todd to be friendly. And once again, in this circumstance, those appear to me to be friendly and reasonable amendments, and I accept both of them.
And so, Justice Baxter, you reiterate your second?
I accept.
All in favor, then, of the recommendation, say aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed? Matter carries unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Fresno. Thank you to the presenters.